Please be seated. Good afternoon. We are here in the matter of Washoe County versus Charles Otto et al. This is case number 56253. We have Ms. Fullstone and Mr. Creekman once again, however, on opposite sides of the courtroom this afternoon. Welcome back.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you very much. May it please the court. My name is David Creekman. I'm before you today representing the Washoe County clients in this case. This is an appeal of the dismissal of Washoe County's petition for judicial review of a decision of the State Board of Equalization. The petition.
Before you get started, can I ask you one simple question?
Yes.
Why didn't you challenge the decision that disallowed you to intervene in the first place? There was a motion to become a party,
right?
Which was denied. Is that right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And that wasn't challenged. That went unchallenged.
It is being challenged as part of the petition for judicial review. It's one of 11 bases for challenging that decision.
So you're saying that's part of this challenge is the denial of your motion to be a party in the first place.
That's correct. But you know, Your Honor, I'm not even entirely certain that that motion for party status was obligatory. In the proceeding before the state board, that action was brought by the Washoe County assessor. The Washoe County assessor decided that he would not be pursuing a petition for judicial review. So the petition for judicial review was brought in the name of Washoe County itself. I believe that this distinction between the assessor, between Washoe County, is really a distinction, ultimately, without a difference, based on this court's holding in Wyman v. Holmes. It's the county that has the authority to sue and be sued. It's the county whose resources and finances are at issue. In Wyman v. Holmes, that was an employment-related case that dealt with a claim of wrongful termination against the district attorney. The court very nicely set forth the proposition that the district attorney is but an agent, even though he is an independently elected official, he's but an agent of the overall umbrella organization. The same analogy is true with respect to the assessor and Washoe County. So back to your original point, I'm not entirely certain that the motion to intervene was even necessary, but I did it as a protective measure, and in that it was denied, it forms one of 11 bases, substantive bases, for Washoe County's petition for judicial review, the petition which we're here to talk about that was dismissed by Judge Wilson based on Washoe County's alleged failure to improperly name parties, taxpayer parties, to the proceeding before the state board, and then to improperly serve those taxpayer parties. The dismissal denied Washoe County's right to judicial review, contrary to the rule established by this court in State versus McGuire, that any doubts regarding the right to judicial review should be resolved in favor of allowing judicial review. It allows the State Board of Equalization to unfairly set binding precedent regarding state tax legislation. It's unfair, this opportunity for the State Board to set that precedent, because it provides absolutely no checks in our system of checks and balances on the operations of the State Board. And it subjects Washoe County citizens to unjust outcomes in inequitable distribution of its tax revenues. It's been 61 years since the U.S. Supreme Court set the standard for due process notice in Mullane versus Central Bank and Trust Company. If the same standard still applies today, and it's notice reasonably calculated under the circumstances of the case. The circumstances of this case are formed by effective regulations of the Nevada Tax Commission that govern the operation of the State Board of Equalization. Those regulations require that reasonable notice be given to a party at the party's address, as those addresses appear in the records of the Department of Taxation. The regulations go on to obligate that documents, including notices, be served either by mail or by person. Such service is only proven by the Department of Taxation's inclusion of a certificate of service at the end of the documents that were served. State Board of Equalization compliance with these regulations is obligatory. It's not optional. It's obligatory under 361, 375, sub 10. The record in this case is significant for what it doesn't contain. The record in this case indicates that four notices were given by the State Board of Equalization prior to the hearing on July the 20th. Two were given on May the 12th, 2009. The first of which was mailed only to the Washoe County Assessor and the Washoe County Board of Equalization. The second indicates it was mailed to no one. The third notice, a notice of the July 20th, 2009 hearing, contained a multi-page listing of taxpayers, yet once again, no indication, absolutely no indication, it was mailed to anyone. A fourth notice was published in accord with Nevada's open meeting law. There's not a mailing requirement to taxpayers associated with that notice. But interestingly enough, that notice wasn't even posted on a tree or in a library in Incline Village. The record is also significant in establishing that both opposing counsel and I were aligned on this notice issue at one point in time. We were in lockstep with one another. On June 9th, opposing counsel filed objections to inadequate and improper notice. In those objections, she stated, quote, notice to the parties has omitted the taxpayers who are identified and recognized as respondents and who participated as respondents in earlier hearings. Notice to the parties is set forth in this case included the Washoe County Assessor, but omitted taxpayer respondents and substituted the Washoe County Board of Equalization in their stead, thereby denying them due process and any effective participation in the matter before the board. When this case was noticed for hearing on June 10th, taxpayers were magically no longer respondents. And the hearing on case number 6508, this case before the State Board, must be re-noticed recognizing the taxpayers as the party respondents. I similarly objected to inadequate notice on July the 6th. On July the 10th, the issue was verbally raised before the State Board, and on July the 20th, at the actual meeting of the State Board, the issue was again verbally raised. The inadequacy of notice forms yet another basis, substantive legal basis, for Washoe County's petition for judicial review. The point here is that although Mullane versus Central Hanover Bank and Trust establishes the flexibility of the due process clause with respect to notice and the fluidity of the requirement for adequate notice is never so fluid as to change in midstream. The standard is set before the hearing occurs and doesn't vary depending upon whether the would-be recipient of the notice wins or loses at the hearing. Non-noticed and non-served taxpayers cannot be considered parties to the administrative proceeding, nor parties to any subsequent petition for judicial review. I think this point is maybe best illustrated by reversing the situation as it occurred before the State Board. Let's say before the State Board on July the 20th, Washoe County had prevailed. Would then, I question, the non-noticed and non-served taxpayers, who, in my estimation, should have been noticed and served, rise to party status so as to mount an effective petition for judicial review of Washoe County's win before the State Board? I think not, or at least the fight would be made, and we'd be standing right here arguing the opposite of this point. But even though Washoe County was of the belief that unnamed and taxpayers were not parties before the State Board hearing, Washoe County named the unnamed and unserved taxpayers in precisely the same manner that the State Board named them in their notice of upcoming hearing. There was a reference to certain taxpayers. And certain taxpayers as respondents. Okay. So Washoe County did just as the State Board did, but it went so far as to include non-parties before the State Board proceeding by proceeding to mail Washoe County a copy of Washoe County's petition to every taxpayer involved in this litigation. Every Incline Village and Crystal Bay taxpayer. Judge Wilson's order dismissing Washoe County's petition for judicial review also was based on insufficiency of service grounds. Judge Wilson stated incorrectly, in my estimation, that the rules of civil procedure govern all civil suits. If you'll reference Rule 1 of the NRCP, it says that they do govern civil suits, but it provides an exception, except as provided in Rule 81. Rule 81 exempts special statutory proceedings, such as petitions for judicial review, from the scope of its coverage. Judge Wilson went on to say that we should have served our petition for judicial review under NRCP 4. NRC P4 requires or applies to service of a summons and complaint. It's my position that, once again, the rules of civil procedure don't apply, that a petition for judicial review is a continuation of the administrative proceeding. It's initiated under the Administrative Procedures Act by the filing of a petition for judicial review. There is no summons requirement associated with a petition for judicial review. In fact, requiring a summons would essentially be a futile act, because the purpose of the summons is to put a new defendant on notice of his or her need to answer the complaint and to defend against the complaint, lest a default judgment will be taken against the defendant. This similar situation doesn't apply in a petition for judicial review, as, for instance, evidenced here today. We named the executive branch agency, the Nevada Department of Taxation, and the State Board as respondents in our petition for judicial review, but nothing obligates their participation in this case. You can see by their absence that they're not defending the action of the State Board. Any service that is required was simply effectuated by mail, under NRCP 5's provision relating to the service of papers and other pleadings. This is just what Washoe County did in mailing its amended petition to all the taxpayers in Incline Village and Crystal Bay, even though it didn't need to mail it to all of them because of their non-status as parties. Here, I want to advise the court that this dispute in which rules apply to petitions for judicial review and which don't is more widespread than the court might realize. If you get onto NevadaJudiciary.us and click on the self-help link, it'll take you to the 8th JD rules and self-help forms and the like, which, once you pull up the proper form, clearly state that a petition for judicial review is served by mail, with no reference to NRCP 4's requirement for personal service. And that, with 2 minutes and 20 seconds remaining, unless there are any questions, I'll save the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Creek.
Any questions? No?
Ms. Folstone.
Thank you. Sue Ellen Folstone on behalf of the respondents at Charles Auto et al. The analysis in this case begins necessarily with the district court's order of dismissal. The district court dismissed the petition for judicial review to the county's amended petition for judicial review on the grounds that it failed the statutory requirements. It is established law that judicial review is a creature statute. You have to comply with the statutes. The county's initial petition failed to name the parties of record, failed to satisfy the requirements of the statute. The district court said, fine, you didn't do this right. It was timely, but you didn't do it right. Under the law, we're going to let you do it again. Specifically directed the county to name the individual taxpayers affected by the state board decision. Specifically referred the county to Exhibit A to the state board decision, which contains a multi-page list of those taxpayers by name and parcel number. Initially, the county had filed a petition that named the state board and then named certain taxpayers unidentified. The only changes the county made when it filed its amended petition was to remove the unidentified from the caption and from paragraph 3. Everything else stayed the same. It still didn't name a single individual taxpayer, notwithstanding the direct order of the district court. When the district court looked at it, when it came back as an amended petition, we filed a motion to dismiss again, and the court, exercising its discretion, dismissed it, and properly so. If you were going to reverse this for an abuse of discretion, you would have to find that the district court acted arbitrarily. It certainly didn't act arbitrarily. It gave the county an opportunity to plead this properly, and the county didn't do it. It didn't act capriciously. It didn't act in violation of the law. The law specifically requires that a petition for judicial review name all the parties of record. Now, Mr. Creekman goes on about, you know, what the state board did, but what the state board did or didn't do in terms of mailing or service on taxpayers is just irrelevant to what the county was required to do under the petition, under the judicial review statute. For one thing, the state board wasn't taking any rights away or seeking to take rights away from taxpayers. It was affirming the county board decision in favor of taxpayers. Only aggrieved parties can seek judicial review. If taxpayers had a complaint about notice, that was absolved in the determination in their favor. Now, Mr. Creekman says that he and I were of one mind on this, which is simply not true. When the tax department first noticed this decision, this review of the county board's equalization decision, it named the Washoe County Board of Equalization as one party and the assessor as the other. And we objected to that because we said taxpayers are parties here. They're the ones affected by this. You've never done this before. And the state board changed its mind, re-noticed it with taxpayers as respondents. We also objected because they didn't notice all taxpayers. They omitted some 300 or so. But during the course of the hearing, they re-included those 300 as parties, and we withdrew our objection on that basis. What matters here? The court, the statutes are clear. The court's order was clear. The county's obligation was clear. It simply decided not to do what the court told it to do. Mr. Cleveland told you, what if the situation was reversed? I'd ask you to think about what would be the situation if the taxpayer had petitioned for judicial review and failed to name the assessor. The court said, well, try again. File an amended petition, name and serve the assessor. And the taxpayer still didn't do it. The county would be, in the lower court. And in this court, if need be, saying, how many chances does the taxpayer get? There is no double standard. The county had its opportunity to correct its pleading, to plead it properly, to name taxpayers of record as the taxpayers who were parties of record, as they were identified as parties of record, not just by the state board, but by the district court. The issue of service, whether under Rule 4 or Rule 5, is an interesting one. The issue raised as an alternate ground for affirming the decision that the county is not, in fact, a party of record is also an interesting one. But this court really doesn't get past the question of, did the district court abuse its discretion here? On these facts, on what the county did and failed to do, you cannot find that the trial court abused its discretion in dismissing the amended petition. Talk briefly about the county's argument that it really didn't have to file a motion to intervene because it's really indistinguishable from the county assessor. And that really just isn't true. I mean, under 361.280, for example, the county can sue the county assessor. I mean, they are not the same party. Only the county assessor can take an appeal. The county assessor was the party of record here. Now, could the county have petitioned as for judicial review of the decision by the state board not to allow it to intervene? Yes, it could have. It could have filed a petition for judicial review limited to that issue only. It can't bootstrap the failure on that issue into a review of the entire proceeding. It simply could, as in case, think of it in a minute, the surety case, the capital indemnity, gone back and said, reverse this because we should have been allowed to intervene. We need a new hearing. Intervention before the state board, controlled by its rules, completely permissive. I think the county trying to reverse that decision would have been an exercise in futility for sure, because it's permissive intervention, and the county made clear that, it wasn't offering additional evidence. It only wanted to argue about the financial impact on the county, which is not an issue before the county board. As it argues here, it should be allowed to petition for judicial review because of the impact on the county. State board's role is to determine valuation. As the state board itself stated when it rejected the petition to intervene, it is, it's not interested in the impact of that decision. It can't, the constitutional uniformity of valuation and assessment doesn't involve measuring the impact. It has to be made oblivious and independent of any impact analysis. And that's what the state board decided to do in not allowing the county to intervene, because that's the only additional argument the county wanted to make, was the impact of a decision affirming the county board.
Did the assessor initiate a petition for judicial review of the state board's decision?
The assessor did not. And, it was the assessor as the party of record who should have initiated that petition if one was to be initiated. It's the assessor whose valuation determinations were altered by the county board in the decision that was appealed by the assessor to the state board. It was the assessor who should have taken the appeal and did not.
Mr. Creekman maintains that in the petition for judicial review, he contests the state board's rejection of the intervention request. Is that correct? I don't think that's been raised on appeal, but is that correct in the petition itself?
In the petition itself, one of 13 grounds is the denial of the motion to intervene. Again, if that were the only ground, I think he could proceed on that basis, but that's not the petition that was filed.
Well, it's one of the grounds in the petition.
It was one of the grounds alleged in the petition, yes.
But you're saying that the failure to have named all of the taxpayers who are parties to the State Board of Equalization decision, even on that issue, after the court gave them an opportunity to amend, would have justified the court's dismissal of the petition?
Yes, absolutely. The petition, the statute on petitions for judicial review requires that all parties of record be named. The district court imposed that requirement, specifically specified what that involved in terms of, specifically referencing the Exhibit A to the decision and saying, you name these parties. And that's true whether it was a motion, whether the petition was limited to the intervention issue or as broadly drawn as it was. I'm looking at my notes. If there's any questions, I would be happy to address them. You know, one of the things, you know, that Mr. Creekman said is that without the county's right to petition for judicial review here, there are no checks on the operation of the State Board of Equalization. And that is just categorically untrue. The assessor had the right to petition for judicial review if the assessor thought that the State Board erred in its decision affirming the County Board of Equalization. All of the checks on the operation of the State Board exist in the law as it stands, which would exclude the county from seeking judicial review beyond the issue of intervention. No other questions?
Thank you, Ms. Wilson.
I'm talking if I, but I don't need to.
Thank you. Mr. Creekman.
Thank you, Your Honor. Ms. Fullstone advises the court that you're to review Judge Wilson's dismissal under an abuse of discretion standard. The dismissal resulted from a motion to dismiss. The appropriate appellate standard for reviewing motions to dismiss is de novo. You can call taxpayers whatever you want, but they only achieve party status upon satisfaction of their due process rights. And it's peculiar for me to be standing here arguing in favor of the due process rights of taxpayers, but I hope you understand that I'm doing so because if those due process rights are not fulfilled, they never achieve party status to the State Board proceeding and subsequently never achieve party status to the petition for judicial review. So that's the link that's being made here. What the county is required to do as far as naming taxpayers is dictated by what the State Board of Equalization did. And the State Board of Equalization failed to serve, to name these taxpayers and to serve them.
And yet you seem to be making the argument on behalf of the county that your request to intervene really wasn't necessary. You could simply appeal the outcome of the State Board decision even though you weren't a party in front of the State Board.
I beg to differ with you, Your Honor, that we were a party.
How so?
Based on the Wyman v. Holmes analysis, based on...
No right to appeal an assessor's or a state, a county board of equalization decision. Only the assessor could do that.
I disagree with you, Your Honor. Under the precedent established by this court in the Mineral County case, that case provides Washoe County with independent...
That case only addresses the right of the county to pursue a petition for judicial review from a State Board of Action, State Board of Equalization action, in which Mineral County was a party to the State Board proceeding.
You know, that is not clear from the text of the opinion, having read it a couple hundred times.
I don't disagree that that point is not, but if you go back in the record, it is.
Yes. But Mineral County doesn't distinguish, again, because it's not clear in the record, where Mineral County decided to enter into the proceeding.
Mineral County got the right to pursue that petition based upon 233B, right, which required all parties to be named.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying that you're justified in not naming the 8,700 taxpayers because they didn't become parties before the State Board.
That's precisely correct.
And just so I understand your argument, they didn't become parties because the State Board failed to notify them.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Okay.
They never achieved party status. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Creekman. Ms. Fullstone, Mr. Creekman, thank you for your arguments. This case will stand submitted.